Cosmetic Radio Health Minute. I'm Vivian Williams. Kidney stones form when salt and minerals.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here. And I have again a guest, Mr. Rod Tam. We didn't finish up what we were talking about last time, and we will probably never will. But we'll try, and we're just going to be tossing around various things on the economy and local economy, and that's the for me. I it's not an economy now. It's we're privileged to work for the man, because apparently that's all we do. But I can say things like that, I guess. But Rod, he's a politician, and he's been around, and he might want to go back, and so he don't want to say the wrong thing, but I understand. But he's going to tell you the basic truth, right, Rod?
Right, and good morning to you, Carol. Thank you very much for inviting me here.
Yeah.
I appreciate it very much, and I'll tell people the factual information. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of that.
No, I jokingly, but speaking of politics, what a wonderful choice we have.
What do you mean by that?
We have, well, starting local here, we got Kurt Caldwell. Now, we can't beat that. I mean, that's the ultimate choice, you know. And
and who else do you have?
And all the others who want to be like Kurt Caldwell. Because the getting's good, man. It's some good money out there. You know, I just noticed in the paper today there's Kurt is part of Bancorp, the bank. He's on the board, making big bucks. And the Star Advertiser ran a nice piece on him on volcanic ash.
Oh, I see.
Dave Shapiro. I mean, I didn't bring the paper in with me, but I've been expressing sentiments like that with Kurt Caldwell, and but again, I express my concerns. I bring to the people the issues, and because it does not say KWAI, NBC, ABC, CBS, and, you know, so they kind of like, well, dismiss it. They don't get up in arms. But I know when a thief is a thief, no matter what, and whether I'm on a radio show or a little radio show, he's still a thief. And he, for me, one of the most, his greatest insult to us, because it says that we would tolerate anything as a people, as a community here. His, you know, to boast that 1.6 million or now 2 million or so dollars in his war chest, and we got issues out there, you know, we never saw him break a sweat.
I got a suggestion for him.
Mm-hmm.
That money he doesn't really need for a re-election, he can give it back to the people and pay for services.
Yeah?
Yeah, and especially the homeless. He talks about saving the homeless on the street. And how about giving some money for subsidizing their rent? That would be a great idea. Mm-hmm. What a political move that would be for him for re-election.
Well, yeah, that would be good. But I guess the being that we're talking economics is that my belief is that he should never have taken it.
Right,
you see, because the people that he took it from have special interests. And so, you know, it's like, hey, great going, Kirk. Give us a $5 bill back, baby. You know, and then he gets out and brag, and he'll be on TV with it going, I declare that I give $5 back to these poor people.
Yeah. And you know, you're right about a conflict of interest that Kirk Hodwell has with this financial institution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he wasn't mayor, they wouldn't have put him on the board.
Yeah, I mean.
So where's Charles Tuttle investigating?
Who?
You know, Chuck Tuttle.
Oh, he's in that movie.
He's
in that movie with the girl with the little dog that got blew away with the hurricane, tornado. He's in that movie. That's the Tuttle that I know. The other one is a figment of our imagination.
Oh, the Chuck Tuttle from the Ethics Commission of the city?
Well,
yeah.
Is there such a thing as the Ethics Commission?
Well,
the city,
you know, it's biased.
Yeah.
And they pick and choose their evidence, and I know
for a fact, firsthand.
Firsthand experience, you know. It's not a court of law, but he treats it like a court of law. And I got to feel sorry for him. You know why? Because his wife is Associate Chief Justice Nakamura. So
right.
He must be envious of her. And he must make decisions. But, you know, he's making some opinions. And supposedly those opinions are supposed to be or advice.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to go to the mayor's office. But he likes to make decisions as a judge.
Well,
so you know, there's biasness there and unethical things in terms of how they make decisions. Think about it.
And this is quite relevant to the economics of this city and of this state. I had my doubts about Chuck Tuttle, you know, with many, many, many occasions where I would introduce people that were going to him to inform him of unlawful or unethical activities that were going on when city functions. And Chuck would receive them quite well, but he would blow them off later. And so where I really finally decided this man is just a simple crook. He is – it's nothing to do with his wife. He is just a corrupt, in-the-pocket kind of a guy.
He's also biased. You know, Charles DeJule, when he was councilman, used his city council allocation to go to meetings for an attorney, and he's an attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what happened in this is that border water supply where people were getting billed and then expensive systems that are not working, the computer system, the payment system, and all of that. Now, there were people working for border water supply that provided information that was clear that there were illegal activities. I don't mean unethical, but illegal activities. Chuck Tuttle hired Letha DeCaris and the mayor and that border water supply troop got together and covered it up and went and threatened the people that were blowing the whistle.
Oh, that's terrible.
So,
you know, the border water supply is appointed.
Yeah.
It's political.
And by the mayor. So, my conclusions that I've drawn, and as far as an economical impact, it impacts many a people because they get charged for water, and their bills supposedly have been accurate by the computerized system. And we learned that the system just was a complete failure, and they were estimating most of the bills.
Right.
So you don't know what you really used. And so for Tato and DeCaris to go and threaten, I know firsthand, because they called me up. I'm the one who wrote the article and filed a complaint and all that, and tried to intimidate me as if I give a rat's butt about them calling me up. Well, we want to interview you. No, you don't want to interview me. You want to threaten me like you threatened the city workers.
Right.
And they needed more money, so the mayor allocated $25,000 for DeCaris to stay on so that they could thwart that so-called investigation. But I believe if things are consistent and the truth be told, I'm informed that there is a revisit of that investigation from a criminal standpoint, and not because Chuck Tato initiated it, and not because DeCaris, and not because of the mayor, but because of other entities that are interested in looking at the millions of dollars that were stolen from the public. So, you know, and that cuts into the paychecks or the little life savings or the pensions that the senior citizens that are sitting here listening to you and I right now.
Right. Well, you know, Chuck Tato is appointed.
Uh-huh.
He's a hired gun, basically. So uh-huh. he will lean towards whichever direction he's been told to do or what's beneficial for himself.
But, you know, again, there's somebody desperate to get in. I hope this is a really, because I don't know. 524-1080 is the number if you want to talk to Rod or have questions. Good morning. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
I have a question. I want to know, how is it that somebody can get a grant for over $1 billion to go to the rail? I'm real curious as to how you're talking about corruption. Man, over a billion dollar grant. If any of you guys know about that subject on any level, I'd like to hear about it. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, you have to have a real investigation on that. You're asking for an investigation, but it has to be by a neutral party. Not within within a certain kind of one rule, basically.
Well, let's go back to the first step of this thing. So he calls and he says there's a $1 billion grant. So where do we start looking? On the which piece of floor tile do we start looking? There's 1,000 floor tiles. Which one do we pull up to find the initial? Who got it? See, this is not clear. I think he's raised this issue before.
Well, I would have to find out more in terms of what the basic information is,
yeah.
You know, to find out in terms of what this grant is all about and who got the grant and who applied for it.
Well, and does it exist? I mean, I'm a good hunting dog. I mean, I take you take me and put my nose on this trail in the scent. Hey, I'm a bloodhound, but I'm not the kind of hound that just go around woo. You know,
you're a person that's right on top of things.
Not interested. Yeah. But I think he's alluding to $1 billion that was given to the rail, or I don't. You see where that I've asked him before to give me greater details, because I mean I'm not the swiftest person, but I take my time and get there. But, you know, and there are people listening, so the intent of this is to help them educate themselves with information.
Well, overall, there's a lack of financial accountability on the whole project of the rail, basically, when you think about it. You know, funny, the mayor denied it at first, Mayor Kirk Caldwell. He was pushing for the rail. Now he says, it's around election time, that he's concerned about financial accountability. So he's trying to take the heat off himself and put it back on the HART.
You've been in that circle, and you're considering getting back in it. But how is it that, where does a person, have you ever found yourself wanting to deliver information that you know is smacks in the face of just an outright lie and deception? For example, the mayor has had, how long has he been in? Three years?
Yeah, 3 years.
And
he had 2 years.
And is acting a mayor?
Actually, he had 2 years left over from Mufi Hanna.
Right, so 2 years, so he's been in five, plus he was managing director. And then,
right.
So can you give us some insight? Where does a man get the fortitude to come back to us if, when he's had a failed policy, running around threatening and harassing and generating laws that harass the homeless and doing absolutely nothing? Spoke about the HUD monies that are, you know, suspect and the abuse of them. How does one put his pants on in the morning or dress, let me be equal, and then come back to the public and say, now I declare that I'm going to fix this. I screwed around for the last 5 years, but I'm going to do it now. How do you think that the people, how do you cross that bridge?
Well, let me say this, describing the mayor at this time. I've watched him over the years. I watched other mayors and so forth. And Fossey, Mayor Frank Fossey, was the people's mayor.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and Murphy Hanneman was a singing mayor. Peter Carlisle was the jokey mayor. He uh-huh. always joked. He couldn't uh-huh. answer questions, basically.
Right.
In fact, he's not going to run again. He would make a terrible mayor. He created this whole mess about the rail system. Worry about lack of financial accountability. Now, you have here a mayor who's called a public relations mayor.
Yeah.
So whatever benefits him publicly, he'll switch his tone of voice.
I have never seen any one politician get so much airtime for nothing.
Well, he plays nothing. Along with the news media. They love
yeah.
him.
And that brings me to what does the media do for us? I think we may not realize it and how easily it is done. The media picks our leaders for us. They eventually, through the process of, hey, I have... there were some flying snails that came in today. What are you going to do about it? Oh, can I get a comment from you? All of a sudden, here's a politician standing there talking about flying snails. Wouldn't know what the hell he's talking about, never gave any consideration to it. And after you turn the cameras off, that's the last thing. But these are the go-to people. And the media, I have learned, actually feed us who makes it on that ballot.
Well, the news media basically doesn't feed us factual information.
Yeah.
It's all biased information, opinion information. You know, in terms of, for example, the daily newspaper, the Star advertiser, they're going down under. Their only support, basically, is because of Midweek,
uh-huh.
you know, which is a free subscription. But anyway, you read a Star advertiser, it's really not factual information. It's secondhand information, and it's opinionated information. Not only in the editorials, but outside of editorials.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's why a lot of people are not reading the Star advertiser, quite frankly. You can get free advertiser, by the way, Star advertiser from the hotels in Waikiki. Mm-hmm. The bus system carries mm-hmm. it.
Well, you know, here's an interesting observation. Recently, there was this H-Power audit that came out. And the media presented a half-assed coverage of it. Star Advertiser exposed the, printed out, and wrote a good article on the audit. But the rest of the media just sat around, didn't really go at it. And we're talking about what's the difference between $1 billion increase of cost overruns and change orders on the rail or H-Power. What's the difference? Still out of the same coffers right. of the taxpayer, but no play. And then there was many of them say, well, the audit only covers a period of time from 2010 to 2012, and that really doesn't apply to the mayor. BS.
It does not apply to the mayor. It doesn't make sense.
He hadn't run out screaming saying this is screwed up, but what he has done, and we have showing that through the Campaign Spending Commission, is that the mayor has taken substantial donations from two of the operatives therein and their employees at H-Power. Uh-huh. You know, substantial money, substantial donations, and yet this is current. Preparing him for this coming election. So how can they say, well, he's really not having much to do with it? That was a prior administration that this audit focused on.
Well, put it this way. We all know that Kirk Caldwell, as mayor, has millions of dollars in his campaign coffers. How do you think he's going to use it? He's going to buy time in the Star advertiser.
Yeah.
So they have to be good to him, right,
but
frankly.
But again, you know, every day we get fed this pablum of Caldwell standing there with his Palaka shirt on and this BS, and nobody's asking substance to get for Caldwell to leave his office and to get to YPO, for example, where he just held a press, was participating in a press conference on emergency medical vehicles and the access, right?
Right.
How many potholes and how many stall lights and all of that did he come through? Nobody covered that, and he's there, right? So I don't believe at the current trend that he would need $5 to really pay for a campaign, because he's already campaigning.
Right, he's already campaigning.
And I know...
He's in his office. It's
right, and everybody... do that, because you know, if it was a genuine effort, that if there was a matter that he needed to speak on, and it's just coincidence, well, hey, I'm performing my duties as a mayor, I'm addressing the public. But we didn't see him still yet to talk about the public relationship flop there at H Power and the millions of dollars. We didn't see him say one word on TV about border water supply and that he was going to ask for an investigation. And then you understand?
Right.
So I say his whole setup is bogus, but it's up to the people to continue. Someone asked me, why don't you don't like to talk politics? No, because if I showed you someone that's stealing from you, you still tell me he's a nice guy. Well, then, if he's a nice guy, then no need of us getting into politics and discussing.
That's why they call Mayor Caldwell the public relations man.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he does a good job of public relations. He has a gift of talking and snowballing people, quite frankly.
Yeah.
It's really sad, but I want to hear something really juicy, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
I've come across a lot of senior county workers, and I visit in terms of the city hall and so forth doing business. As a business consultant, I noticed that a lot of people come up to me and say, hey, we don't want Mayor Caldwell in office again. This would be his last term.
Yeah.
You know, because he's inefficient, unproductive, in-house and as a manager.
Yeah. Let's see here. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've been at the City Hall Budget, Macaulay Library, the Manoa elementary school, and Caldwell has been there every time with the same BS. And it all started with Mookie Hanneman and wanted to be elected. He went to Lingle and wanted 1%. He got 0.05%, but the state took 10%, and that's how it all began. Went to Radford, dealt with engineers who told me that any problems we're going to deal with that when we get to it. And Kobayashi brought up after two or three pillars, Hart, you have no money. How are you going to continue to pay, build them up, tear them down? And Bonner said, you want to send the boys back to the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Bonner could be mayor. Caldwell could be mayor. Either one could be CEO of Hart. It makes no difference. The key is they're unconscionable.
Mm-hmm.
The rail is the Trojan horse for large corporations to make a lot of money. DOD is the Trojan horse to make money. Tomorrow, I'm going to the City Charter Commission. It is about rail. And what they're talking about, and this is kind of a late date. If I knew more sooner, I would have gone sooner. I did once already, but... they want the bus, the van, and the rail. One, either to come up to something similar to Hart, but after it's finished, I don't think Hart wants it. I'm talking about a private entity. Or if the rail, the van, and the bus is going to come under an elected board, the government, the city, the administration, the mayor, the city council, and so forth.
Hold on there. Rod, with the failing bus system,
yes.
Hold on, Richard.
Yes.
With the failing bus and with all these things, how does that play into our economy from a former city council person? Does that have an impact that has been seen or documented when all these things are broken? Has anybody quantified?
Hold on, Richard.
I know you do. Just hold on a minute. Hold on. Go ahead.
Okay, well... basically, no one has ever investigated the financial means of the bus system or the rail up to date.
Mm-hmm.
It's a it's a mixed can of worms, so to speak, and there's no accountability. So for the City Charter Commission to make a judgment call in terms of the future organization of the bus system and the rail is just pulling out of the air, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Richard. I want to see. We hear these. We hear all of these things, but we how from a different viewpoint. How do they play into the economy? How do they impact us? You know, I think for the last, 5 years now?
I can answer that. And so much for a quote from somebody inside Honolulu Hall. He's sitting downstairs waiting to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And an official, I can't name him, but he said, you have to realize that the rail is draining the city of all the services. They're getting most of the money. And in terms of quality management, if you can't measure it, don't do it. They don't want to measure it.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want to measure it. If you get any statistics, any facts, any data, where does it come from? Who do they send to Washington, D.C., to the Federal Transportation Agency?
Ekaika Anderson, he goes.
Exactly. That's what I'm Moneyhand. Elefante.
Moneyhand. Moneyhand yes. goes. Yeah, that's, you know, Ekaika Anderson, all
yes.
the up-and-coming crooks. You know,
that's right.
Being groomed. How do you screw the people? I don't know, but I'm willing to learn. You know.
They don't care. No,
oh.
Mr. Cox, key word, unconscionable. And they are sociopaths. Grabauskas is going to get his money. His justification is 100,000 miles ahead, complete the project regardless of the consequences. They didn't know where they were going to get the money. They don't know where the money is going to be. They don't have it now. And the bids are out. One bid, I guess, is okay from Kapolei to the airport. But after that, they theoretically don't have substantial empirical proof that they have enough money to complete the two-thirds of the project.
Yeah, Richard.
By their own admission.
Well, Richard, this is one of these other aspects of it why, again, I limit myself to discussion politics after I've had my fill of it, and especially the rail. There's one key thing, and I share with you, this is how I view it. You see, when we say they have no idea where they're going to get the money, I agree with you. They have no idea how much they need. I agree with you. But there's one thing we all overlook, and we're not being truthful to ourselves. They know where the money is. They know what they need, and they know where they're going to get it from. They're going to go back to the lazy city council and the mayor who's conspiring to do it. See, that's the misconception. They do know where they're going to get it from. They're going to get it from the taxpayer's pocket and from the salary. And when you purchase across the counter, when you pay for gas, when you do all of that. They know, and we need to abandon that thought where they representing that they don't know. They know. They got their eye on the pie. You follow? And,
yeah.
and that's why they've not gravitated. They go to feds and get a little money, but you don't see them going to Russia and off to Spain and making borrowing money from there, right? They know because everything they propose eventually comes back to the poor taxpayer.
So
they know. So we if you know, you might want to consider abandoning that stance and representation and incorporate the real fact is they know where the money is.
The Grabauskas, by his own admission, is saying exactly what you just said, that now everything's going fine, but if there's a problem, the problem is with the city council. We do not make the laws. And what you said, exactly. So now if the city council votes, and they're all picked, except for Ann Kobayashi, I'm sorry, she's not one of them.
Hold on here.
They are picked by choice.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're going to go along with what you just said, tax increase, real property tax,
hold
general
on.
Excise
hold
tax.
On. We got another caller. Hold on, Rick. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments.
Keep that lady on the horn. I'm going to ask again. this whole, oh, Dan Inouye is the one who initiated this over, I guess, $1.6 billion grant. The reason I keep bringing this up, because I wish I knew how to get a $1.6 billion grant for anything. That's money you do not have to pay back. That's the smartest, most deepest knowledge of business I have ever heard. All I know is that the money went to the rail, and the fact that it went to the rail is just astounding, because even after he died, there was all this talk about how that grant had to go through. I often wonder, where did that money go? Who kept it? The whole thing. I just wish I knew the mechanics of how to get a $1.6 billion grant for anything.
Okay,
so the only reason I keep bringing it up.
Yeah, so that's the grant you're talking about. You're speaking of a grant that a it's $1.6 billion.
Oh. Yeah, it's about $1.6 billion grant for the rail. And that's a lot of money to get for free for anybody.
Okay.
And Dan Inouye, or his crew, or whoever, is what's behind it. And I would love to see why would they initiate that much money to something.
All right, well, let me ask Ron here. There's another caller, and just call back if we get disconnected. Okay, bye. Thank you. Caller, thank you for calling. You go ahead with your comments.
Hi, Carol.
Yes.
Goes on to some more corruption that I just found mind-boggling. I guess you heard about homeless tracking system derailed after city failed to pay vendor. Did you hear that story?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the guy ended up in the vendor ended up in the hospital because the city wasn't paying them. It was his paycheck. It was his money. So listen to this. So they could pay, to set up a deal so they could count the homeless. And if you don't get a good count of the homeless, your federal grants and the stuff that they can get from the federal government will be less. So I would think right there, if you invest into a staff just to do this count, your return from the federal government would be really wonderful, and the return to the homeless folks who desperately need this money would be great. And I mean, who can I ask the Rob Tam? Who gets the counter for this? Isn't this kind of the mayor, Kuhani? I mean, isn't this the part where he should be able to, or he should be responsible for?
Well, let me respond to all these questions, if I may, the last caller and yours. And to sum it up, basically, this frustrating of the people or the citizens of Hawaii, especially the city kind of Honolulu, is what is our government doing? How are they representing us? Where is where the Constitution say that government for and by the people? Okay? You don't have that this time. Okay? And that's the problem is, and government is not acting prudently as a business. With that, I mean in terms of there's no financial accountability, there's no goals and objectives in providing the public services for the future, short-term and long-term. The bottom line is productivity and efficiency of our city and state governments. They're not acting on behalf of what we want.
So what you're saying is there's really no oversight, really.
The real oversight is by the people itself. You know, we need to be more alert and give our communications to the government officials, especially the administration. Your day-to-day operations are to the governor, respective of the state, and by the mayor of the city of Honolulu. And they're not being accountable at this time. If you ask all these questions, then we're all at a loss. And why? Because they haven't been doing their job in terms of letting us know what's going on in government.
You know, that's the biggest trick they use. They say, well, yeah, we're doing this, but we don't have the money for it.
Yeah, you know, basically, I got chastised in my 28 years of service. They called me Mr. Sunshine because I gave out too much public information. And so they came after me, basically. And they told me, Rod, my colleagues and also the administration told me, Rod, you're not supposed to do that. Yeah. You're supposed to keep it in-house, away from the people. I said, yeah, but we have a constitution in the United States and the state of Hawaii. The government is for and by the people.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, hold on, guys. Richard, yes. I'll get right back to you. Hold on.
Hello?
Good morning. Go ahead with your comment, caller.
We need more bigger projects. So when you power the train, it can be solar.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can call it the Soul Train.
No, you didn't get it right. It's the
Soul Train.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got to get with it, brother. Where have you been?
I heard property taxes go up 10%.
Yeah.
20% of the 30%.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have one Section 8 recipient, and then that's going to be about all that will be left after they jack the taxes.
I'm surprised that Caldwell hadn't come up with some ploy, or Grabascus, or Grabascus, has come up with a ploy to say the Soul Train. You know, anything goes, man, when they're trying to drain your pockets, right? Richard, go ahead with your finish up with your comments here.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hart has these opportunities, qualifications. They can hire their own lawyers, workers, no union, no. They have eminent domain, and the worst is they are semi-autonomous. I've been before the council of the Charter Commission twice and brought this up. There was discussion months ago before these proposals were finalized, and now just this past week, semi-autonomous came up again. There is no answer. Who holds the governor, the mayor, the city council accountable? There is someone. Who holds Hart accountable? They are semi-autonomous.
Rod,
and, go ahead.
Rod, you are semi-autonomous. You were around when. What does that provide or afford an organization like Board of Water Supply? Why, historically, let's take the Board of Water Supply. Why was it set up that way? Why did we need a semi-autonomous? Were there a bunch of guys together saying, hey, we can make a lot of money because if we can get water into the homes over and way back going back in time, and then it's blossomed, and the Board of Water Supply, was it originally owned by, I had the history of it somewhere, by the Honolulu city government?
Yeah, it was owned by the city government, and then they had a Board of Water Supply made up of elected officials. But the whole part in terms of the semi-autonomy is because those who are appointed to boards and commissions don't want to have to respond every time in terms of making decisions.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, there's no accountability when you think about it.
So and that's when the
power within themselves.
It morphed into semi-autonomous to allow them to make certain decisions.
Yeah, and then also, too, the only thing can be held accountable is the overall budget on them. But then that's not good enough. Every decision that they make has influence in terms of our lives here in the state
uh-huh.
of Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we should get rid of semi-autonomous boards. Take, for example, the University of Hawaii. And that's a creature, basically, I regret when I was a chair for higher education where we provided autonomy to them.
Uh-huh.
That was a big mistake. Look at that. They've gone overboard. Whereby now they've given big salaries to their executives, $300,000-$400,000 basically, beyond what the University of Hawaii can afford. And they constantly ask the state legislature and the governor for money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yet they said they want to be autonomy where they can make decisions, but it's costing us a lot of money.
But in reality, the mayor still has great influence in appointing, for example, the director, correct?
Yes.
I think Wayne Hashira, was it Wayne Hashira? Was Mufi Hanneman appointed?
Right.
Remember him? He was his managing director, and then somehow he slid him into the... So it's not as autonomous. It's almost cloaking the reality of what is really going on. And the amount of money that is spent, for example, the Ever Shaft, I've talked about it, where there's a source of water, where the city actually, the Board of Water Supply actually took millions and paid Campbell Estate for that system that was dysfunctional, not functioning, and in turn is contaminated, but then gave them guarantees for several million gallons of water per day, when we could have just condemned the dang thing and accepted it that way.
Well, there's so many conflicts of interest. That's what it comes down to, bottom line.
And who picks the board members?
Well, the board members are nominated by the mayor, the Board of Water Supply, and confirmed by the city council. But there's no, get this, as far as I've experienced, there's no criteria. It's all political. So there's no basic criteria in terms of confirming them as to the qualifications. Just like, for example, be it in terms of the judges within the state of Hawaii. When I was a senator, I had to confirm the nominations of the governor. And there's no criteria at all. So it's all political. You know, there are some judges I wish I didn't vote for, quite frankly.
Right. Yeah, we're going to be talking the same thing, and we're talking about economy, and you got much to say. But we also have Tom Berg, who's going to join us, former council member Tom Berg, and he has some insight on the cost of rail and related to rail. So we're going to have a we're going to rail away here. But and that'll be starting shortly, and in the next hour or two. But let me answer these questions phone. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your
thank you. The Board of Water Supply is not the same kind of semi-autonomous, according to the Charter Commission and Grabowskis, when he's under direct questioning. The Water Board can raise their own money. I'm not actually sure. I've only heard this for the first or couple of times.
But they are semi-autonomous. It's just
they
that
are.
Each of them have rather unique things that they can do.
That is correct.
Okay.
But let me give you, and I'm going to end on this. The reason for semi-autonomous is they want to avoid political influence. Therefore, HART can avoid political influence by being under autonomous. And thank you so much for your program. Thank you, Mr. Tan. You're terrific. We need it. They don't want you to know.
Well, Richard, you sound like you're going for the day, but I assure you in the next hour we'll hear from you again. Your favorite subject coming.
Look out. You don't know what you're asking.
Go drink.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Go get a Sunday morning brew. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Oi, aloha. Kakaiaka.
Good morning. Aloha. How are you?
Okay, this is Filippo. How
yes.
you doing there?
We're fine. We're tossing money into the wishing well.
Wonderful. Hey, listen, you had a caller inquiring about the knowledge of hearsay of $1 billion.
Okay.
I want to suggest to disclose what I've heard of $1 billion. There's so much money that's coming into Hawaii. It's unbelievable. Anyway, back in 1974, there was in Congress, the enactment of the Alaskan Native Settlement Claims, which they got, it was approved, which they got $1 billion, $100 million for 10 years. But they also got 38 million acres of land. Now, trying to piggyback with that was a bill... H.R. 15666 in the 93rd Congress, okay? This was for the Hawaiian Native Claims Settlement Act, okay? Based on what the Alaskan natives got. But in the Hawaiian version was $1 billion, $100 million for 10 years, but no land. Okay, no land. Since 1975, this bill basically has gone underground. It seems to be, people don't know, and there was a big conference here immediately after that and addressing this. Almost like how the Department of Interior came here summer of last year for 15 days, going to the different islands and locations. Now, the thing about it is that no one seems to know where these monies went. Yet, there are organizations that are under a so-called Native Hawaiian Organizations Associations. You could not get money as an individual, because we all know that we spend the money, right? Mm-hmm. So organizations are put together. And it seems that these organizations under this association control the money.
Yeah. Well,
and then,
go ahead.
75, 76, 77, lo and behold, 1978, the legislature creates the Native Hawaiian Office of Hawaiian Affairs, OHA.
Let me ask you a question, and I rarely do I engage in to this degree publicly on Hawaiian issues, but maybe you can provide me or share with me little teachings here, and that is the Native Hawaiian community knew and had the same opportunity that I had and others have to know that the Department of the Interior was nothing more than a ruse and have screwed the Native Americans to points that we still can't determine to how bad they and how many deals they gave and rejected and what have you. Why did the Hawaiian community even buy into trusting and then and even now? And it seems like now they're more eager to go before and plead to the Interior Department when we know that their path is atrocious. We know that. Why and how did Hawaiian leaders even engage and become pull up a table to the chair and start to accept this?
Well, let me give me my best definition as myself, okay? You know, when the first time you go to Disneyland, you remember that?
Oh, well, yeah, I do. I went to This Is okay. a Small World After All.
Well, I went to Disneyland when I was an adult. I took my children. But I can't imagine a child, the first time going to Disneyland, they wish and pray that that day never ends.
Right.
The Hawaiian population is in Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if anybody wants to look at this closer, in the can I give you a reference?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Others may listen.
California Law Review.
Okay.
July 1975. Title was Native Hawaiian Land Rights by Anil M. Levy.
Okay.
That is available.
Okay.
Okay, brother.
But thank you for your sharing your insights there. But you understand what I'm asking because time and time again.
Anybody know what the SR is for total? What's the salary range?
For turtle?
Yeah, turtle.
No, you're going to have to educate me on that one.
I don't know. Ron should be running for that. Heck, the heck with
Well, I would guarantee it's a slow process.
Okay, Ron, you hang in there, brother.
Hey, thank you very much. You know, what I want to do in the next few minutes, thank you, go over in terms of our economy. And this outline in terms of why our economy is negative.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, do we have a negative economy? Yes, we do. What is a negative economy? Economy is based on employment and cost of living. Hawaii has both a recession and inflation at this time.
Mm-hmm.
The recession is where personal consumer income is insufficient to sustain the basic needs of survival, everyday food staples, basic living accommodations with a roof over the head, and basic clothing needs. Now, inflation is where the cost of goods and services to pay for basic needs are higher than working wages. We have low working wages here in Hawaii, very low. In fact, you know, if you compare in terms of jobs from here to that on the mainland, similar jobs, we're way below those wages and salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the symptoms of a negative economy. are one. Hawaii is the fourth highest cost of living in the United States of America. Two, is the 46th highest in the nation in taxes for the average taxpayer.
That's taxes now, but taxes. Not fees.
No, not fees, taxes.
Like, for example, they just raised the fees for the vehicle, what, an $83 or
right.
Oh, some percentage. I apologize if I'm speaking the wrong number, but it's too much.
Yeah, you know, basically, it's a cop-out. It's a way of taxing people by raising fees. This is a form of taxes, basically. Well,
yeah.
Think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's administrative ability to do it allowed.
It's just like saying that we have a 4.7% excise tax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, excise tax is a compounded sales tax.
Right.
We actually pay anywhere from 12 to 16% sales tax
right.
on our goods and services. So and don't get fooled that you only pay a 4.7. You're paying a compound sales tax.
Yeah.
Right? And then the unemployment is high. In reality, unemployment is over 10% here in Hawaii. Not 3.2 as proclaimed by the state government. Now, unemployment, in their eyes, by state government, is based on telephone surveys, which are not good, basically factual, and those unemployed collecting unemployment compensation. Like, for anybody else who's not collecting, whether it be welfare recipients or just those that qualify for unemployment compensation, you're not counted.
Right.
Basically, you're lost out there in space, basically. Mm-hmm. They don't care about you in government. And fourth...
You mean the people who don't care about the government?
The government doesn't care about those people.
Oh, no. They wish they'd go away and dry up.
Yeah, go up and dry up. We only care about those that we can account for, basically.
That we can tax.
Yeah, right. And by the way, unemployment compensation is taxed.
Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the misnomers is that the less fortunate or unemployed, whatever they do, when they go downtown to drive their car, mm-hmm. they park and put money in the meter.
Right. That's
right?
A tax.
And then when they go and spend their EDB cards, there's a sales tax on that. Am I correct?
Yes.
So nobody escapes the long arm of the tax man.
That's true. You're right.
So, you know, so we project on some portion of the population and say, well, you know, they don't pay. They pay, too.
Yeah, everybody pays. Everybody pays. No one's left
they
out.
They get $10 for medical care. Right. Probably six of that goes into taxes by the time the fees and all the other things.
Yeah, you talk about the homeless. Even they pay taxes when they buy a bottle of water.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, they're paying that 4.7%.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, so I think that's probably how we'll win this battle if we learn to incorporate. We're all getting screwed, so why don't we all fight them?
Yeah, and we have to speak up. We the public. It's like the Boston Tea Party, basically. If you don't speak up, you lose.
We're all going to the city hall or the state capitol to reject the new increase in taxes.
Yeah.
And we pass maybe 15,000 people along the way and say, well, they don't matter because they're homeless and they're living in affordable housing and whatever. So let's just go on and tell those big wigs up there. When, in fact, that people that you passed up on your way to tell off the politicians could add fuel to the fight.
Yeah. You know, I came from an era where there was a lot of speaking up of mm-hmm. people. For example, University of Hawaii, when I went there. Basically, the student government would speak up. We don't want a tuition raise increase,
mm-hmm.
but notice nowadays the student body of the University of Hawaii don't speak up.
Yeah.
So now they're paying too much for that tuition.
Well, we're going to come back here shortly. Tom Berg is in the studio, and Rod Tam is going to be here with us. So we got two city council, former city councilmen, sitting here ready to talk to you and share with you. Now, we don't call the police around here for nobody. This is a free speech station. That's what's wonderful about KWAI. We'll even let the mockingbirds come in and sing to us. But we'll be back shortly.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101.
Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
presence of mind. Said, all right, said, all right. Said, all right, said, all right. Said all right, said all right. Said all right, said all right. Said all right, said all right.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. We're sitting high and mighty on KWAI 1080 AM. You can go to the website at KWAI1080AM.com, and you can listen live on stream, or you can go to carolcox.com, listen live on stream. Whatever you C comes before K, but K, it's okay for you to just go to either one of those. And then, you know, you can pick up Carol Cox Show, the podcast, any time of the day or night, and there you can listen at some of the old shows and what have you. So, and there's always room for a new show here, so please, if you incline and have a need or an interest or your organization, contact Barry Vargengood. Go to the website and get the phone number and send us an email and he can hook you up. But again, I have former City Councilman Rod Tam in the studio with me and also former City Councilman Tom Berg. And we're going to finish up on a little bit about the economics of Honolulu, the economy here, and with Rod. And then we're bringing in Tom is going to chime in with us and tell us about this, that Caldwell claiming that he does not know much about the state expending administering rail surcharge. So we're going to get into those details and give us a little time, and you can call in later, 524-1080, and pitch in. So, Rod, go ahead, if you would, and thanks
Carol.
Again for coming.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I just want to finish up in terms of some of the symptoms of our bad economy, a negative economy. The fourth symptom is the homeless count in Hawaii is in the thousands, which the state does not have a true count of. The homeless are those who live in the streets and live it in multiple family households due to being unable to pay rent and mortgage independently. Now, people don't realize that when you have family members living in your house and they can't afford rent or buying their own house with a mortgage, that they're actually homeless. And you subsidizing in their shelters when you think about it. You know, it's just that they're not living on the streets. And the homeless, you know, are those who are insufficient wages or being unemployed That's one category. And also mentally unstable, another. And those who thirdly, those who prefer the lifestyle of just being left alone on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just like saying, for example, a person have a preference to buy a Mercedes versus that of a Toyota,
mm-hmm.
right? A common average Toyota or a truck, basically, which doesn't have any, many of the rich elements in it.
Right.
Okay? Like, for example, my father owns a truck, and I drive it sometimes where it doesn't have power windows. Okay? So we prefer to do that. And then the fifth symptom is where overtaxation of businesses, especially small business. You know, small business is the backbone of Hawaii's economy, and it's disappearing due to the double taxation. Like, for example, any business person pays a tax on their business, but when they draw money as income from the business, they're paying another tax in the year. So there's double taxation. Now, we're just about one of the only states that has that, quite frankly. So when you think about it, people say, wow, why should I work? I must be on welfare, right? Because of the double taxation. Now, what are the remedies to this negative economy? Number one is diversify Hawaii's economy. We depend too much on tourism. Tourism goes up and down. And remember now in history, we had sugar plantation, pineapple plantation. They were really good in terms of bringing in money. Then they went down. Now they're out of business. Well, tourism can do the same thing, basically. You have bad weather, people are not going to come. You have, and so forth. And the high cost of tourism, you know, hotels, is unbelievable. You're talking about, at a low end, for a hotel room, maybe $175 a day. Now it's over, I think it's over $200 a day for a one.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second remedy is to eliminate double taxation on small business. The third is to eliminate the Jones Act for Hawaii. Now, King Kaukau invited international trade. He let the foreign ships come in with trade, and they brought in money to Hawaii. And their merchants grew and grew in terms of small business. Now, you know that former U.S. Senator Danny Noy did injustice to Hawaii's economy by endorsing and imposing the Jones Act on Hawaii for a number of years when he was alive. Now he's dead. Now's the opportunity to change that around. In fact, Inouye had a conflict of interest. He had stocks in Masson Navigation Company, which was a monopoly here in Hawaii. And we need the Public Utilities Commission of the State of Hawaii to invite other shippers to come here so that our cost of goods will not be so high. Did you know our cost of milk basically comes from the mainland? It's $5 for a gallon, I mean half a gallon. And in the mainland, my nephew came here from California. He said he pays $2.50. So you imagine what we're paying here with outrageous prices, besides the low wages that we receive. Fourth, we should build up our international business trade between East and West in Hawaii. Make Hawaii the international business center of the Pacific. Hawaii does have favorable features to make Hawaii's the international business center. For two things that come to my mind is the multicultural expertise. We have so many multicultures that they understand how to do business around the world. And secondly, we have the technology and computer expertise here, so we should utilize it more. Now, and lastly, fifth, we should develop short-term and long-term economic goals and objectives and plans. The state of Hawaii and the city of County of Honolulu does not have goals and objectives. They operate on a year-to-year budget. That means they have no future in terms, there's no plans for a future for any of us at all. And that's why we're in a flux financially. Did you know that our city of County of Honolulu is actually bankrupt if we had to pay all our notes? And so is the state of Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
We operate on a cash basis right now. And I want to thank you very much for letting me give an explanation in terms of why we have a poor economy and how we can resolve it. Thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned the Jones Act, and I don't want to debate whether it's good or bad, but the same elements that are in place now that allow the Jones Act to be in place and quote, we suffer from the fact that it's in place, who's going to police if we were to remove the Jones Act tomorrow morning? who is going to do the policing, and who is it going to be self-regulated, or are we just going to say the Jones Act is dead and it's a free enterprise and competition is what drives this decision to do away with Jones Act? And those that are participating and bringing shipping. And also, a lot of the cost is not just Jones Act, in my opinion, because Matson, for example, fuel costs, they say that give us the opportunity to raise the prices because the fuel costs has increased. Now we're seeing an decrease in fuel substantially, and they still haven't reduced their prices of shipping, per, you know. The taxpayer or the consumer is still paying that. So what is going to be in place with this Jones Act? I've heard this chorus of let's do away with it, but nobody is there to say this is what we're going to do to guarantee the benefits. It's almost like listening to politicians say, put me in and I'll fix it and I'll win back our country. It's like, well, when did we lose our country? Put me in and we'll save the Constitution. Well, when did we lose the Constitution? You know, and I myself, I'm a democratic, liberal thinking person. What do you mean you're going to win it back from whom? Because I haven't sitting and opposed the Constitution. I benefit from the Constitution. So I'm just curious about, I never hear that side of the conversation in the discussion of the Jones Act. See, everybody's saying, let us do it, and then, but what guarantees, what are they publicly stating?
Okay, you know, very similar to a California or other West Coast states, they have no Jones Act. Mm-hmm. So their cost of goods is much cheaper, and the foreign goods do go to the West Coast. But Matson has to bring it here because they're the only shipping company basically here. So they double the price in terms of what we had to pay for our goods.
Mm-hmm.
Business is good. Business competition is good for our economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for the consumers. You know, you have more sustainable life when you think about it. Meanwhile, our youth are moving away because the cost of living is too high. Mm-hmm. So the burden now is becoming that of the senior citizens. And in the senior citizens, if their kids, their grown-up kids or grandchildren stay here, they're actually supplementing their cost of living, too.
Yeah. Could the fact that the roadways, and there's a lot of transportation of goods on the mainland over roadways, and so that may be a cheaper way of transporting it, and also the location of the producer, maybe that it's centrally in some instances where you can get a gallon of milk for less. But, I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's true, but, you know, you need competition. Otherwise, you have monopolies here.
Oh, yeah. And,
yeah,
that's,
and then monopolies take advantage in terms of increasing their costs.
And that's exactly what I'm speaking to. So we hop out of one hot bath water and then hop into the other. So what, you know, take, for example, Colorado passed marijuana, and they, you know, really new in their thinking and liberal. And then Hawaii is going to play on the fringes of medical marijuana and all. But then look at, they wouldn't even disclose who the list of people that wanted to participate in the dispensaries. So are we being assured that when we're touting the, or professing to get rid of the Jones Act, and encouraging, what guarantees that we're not just jumping out of one hot bath into the other? That's all I'm asking.
There's no guarantees in life.
Well, yeah. There should be, though, yeah. Because...
But then basically it's a rosier picture that we're going to have in terms of sustainable life for the consumer.
And I agree that no monopoly should be, because we benefit from it, number one. The Jones Act could be done away with. But I'm so leery of, in the state of Hawaii, everybody gets screwed, even though it's professed to be, it's a new angle, it's a new way of doing things, and it's the new fit. And then when we find out what it's really costing, it costs us more, and we have no control.
Well, I'm a businessman, okay? And basically, I know that competition is good, because if my price is too high, okay, and providing services, consulting services, they go to somebody else who can provide the same services.
Yeah.
Okay, so you give an alternative to the consumer, which they can be more affordable to.
Right. But I'm saying to you, I'm not disagreeing or agreeing about it, but these are the things that when this part of the discussion is not there, I get a little worried because then...
Well, let's look at the models in terms of the West Coast.
Right.
You know, and we have to look at those models more.
Right.
What are the good points and the bad points?
But you know, we're, for example, we say deal with the Pacific.
Right.
Expand our relationships in the Pacific. Well, what's the guarantee that people in the Pacific won't stick the screw to us either? Well, when we're already on the mainland, it's like, well, let's just project to the right instead of to the left and go into the Pacific and abandon the California, the mainland aspect of it. It's still an outside provider. And
well, let me give you an example in terms of what happened to China back in 1997 when Hong Kong from British rule was returned back to China.
Uh-huh.
And I was president for United Chinese Society at that time. People asked me, you know, what's going to happen to Hong Kong? Are the troops from China going to be marching in and take over the government? I said, no. What they're going to do is drain the economy. And what do you mean, Rod? They're going to drain the economy to keep their Hong Kong in place.
Mm-hmm.
The people, the government. And they said, they're going to shift everything to Shanghai. And sure enough, that's what they did.
Yeah.
And then Shanghai became much more profitable than Hong Kong.
You may have forgotten. Yeah. We discussed a bit about this, and I still want to do what you and I chatted about.
Sure.
You know anybody, and to include yourself, want to come in, and I'd just like to have a Jones Act supporter, and would you be interested in
sure,
we talk?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's do that because okay. I'm always leery when someone says, "Well, I can do it better." Yeah, right. You're going to use more Vaseline. That's the better. You know, it's still the public and the taxpayer is still going to get ripped. So it's like who has finesse? Who has more Vaseline? Is what? Yeah, go ahead.
Representative Bob McDermott. Eva Beach is the biggest proponent for keeping the Jones Act,
yeah.
And he would gladly jump on an opportunity to come defend it.
This is former Councilman Tom Berg, and again, thank you, Tom, for joining us here. Go ahead, you guys. But let's do that. In the coming week or 2 weeks, let's see if
sure.
we can. I'll try and find someone,
okay.
and let's just. Let's have it talked about and all the specifics and the aspects because some say there's a threat to the security of the nation if we abandon or abolish the Jones Act.
No, there's no threat. Really.
Well, no,
I'm
just saying.
When you think about the Pacific, we had the military base here. Yeah,
yeah, I understand. I'm just saying I would
Pacific.
Love to have a healthy discussion of those that are really in the know because I don't know. All I do is go into my back pocket and pull out more money.
I think it'll be a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And then you can flush things out and see how beneficial it can be to Hawaii.
Well, wait, we have to review.
Yeah.
Let's think it through.
Right.
2000, Governor Cayetano, hey, we're going to do the wiki pilot ferry program.
Mm.
They got a waiver to the Jones Act.
Yes.
It's the only way it would pan out. Gosh, Mayor Hanneman's in town and wants to do the same thing. Let's do a pilot program for a ferry shuttle program. Now, they got the waiver.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like any time you got someone in government trying to put a feather in their cap during the election season, they're going to ask for that very waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to throw
and
that out.
You know, and speaking of Hanneman, he had an investment in the hull designs of certain sliced vessels. See? And that was going to be the vessels that bring the goods there if we did away with the Jones.
With Navitat.
You understand? So these are the things that, you know, hey, you can, anybody can lie to me because I'm too old to really care. But it's
you're not old.
But, yeah, you're the same age as I am.
Yeah.
We're old.
Maybe our kids would call us old.
Go ahead, caller. One quick question or comment. Go ahead.
Gorn, yeah, you were talking about the Jones Act. Another factor that, Rod, Dan, you're a businessman, is when the goods come in, the stevedores have to take them off and whatnot. They get high wages, and I guess Matson pays for them, and that also adds cost to the goods also, right?
Okay.
So
yeah.
That'd be looked at, though.
Well, so you'd be interested in listening to a show where there's people sitting and talking a forum, sort of. You okay with that? All right, well, we're going to go shoot
good.
For that.
Thanks a lot, Cal.
Hey, thank you. Aloha. Let's do that, please, because it brings some. I don't recall seeing any real open debate where it's just, you know,
John Carroll, former, ran for everything under the sun, still fighting. He has been the lead advocate for getting the Jones Act to go away, and he'd love to also come on.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, again, wasn't challenging Rotem on anything. It was just these are questions that I think should be.
Well, this is what your radio show is all about. Bring out everything on the table. Friendship. And let's do that. You know, for a number of years, Danny Noe didn't want to bring on the table. He didn't want to have public hearings at the legislature at all. In fact, there was a former congressman, Ed Case. He was a proponent for getting rid of Jones Act and exemption. And I saw him one day at Zippy's. He said he got chastised by Danny Noe, and he'll never do it again because he had a backstabbing on him and everything.
Right.
Right? Because why? Danny Noe has stocks in medicine.
The Democratic motto here in this town is shape up or ship out.
You got to act for the people. You have to do things that's good for the people.
Yeah.
Not for your own pocket.
Yeah.
And this is what Danny Noe did. They called him. You know what they called him? People say that the who was that that passed away just recently from Big Island. Can't think of his name right now. But anyway, they called him. He was not the godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The real godfather was Danny Noe.
Oh, you mean Mayhaw?
Yeah,
Mayhaw.
They called him the godfather, but he was not.
Okay.
Danny Noe was known as the godfather and the one-armed bandit.
Mm.
Yeah. In fact, I've been told by people that when he in World War II, he took off valuables off of dead bodies.
Yeah.
He didn't care whether it was American soldiers or Germans or whatever.
Well, I don't know about that. I've heard those things, and who was it? Someone, Milani Trask or someone, referred to him as the bandit, using those terms. But anyway, you're done with that, Ross?
Sure, go ahead.
And Tom Berg, there's this one thing I caught my eye: state profits off rail tax. Tell us about that, and I'm not going to read the email, and so you can give it to us.
Let's bring everybody. This is going to be
Please.
A quick bring you up to current speed here. If we recall back in 2005, the legislature to give the city and county of Honolulu that opportunity to raise a rail surcharge, so to speak, that the legislature to process this, have administrative fee to collect the tax and deposit it into the city and county of Honolulu's coffers. Well, the city and county of Honolulu has, since the tax started in 2007, the state has been withholding a 10% from the city's coffers. Now, this debate going back and forth and why hasn't it been corrected, we all know that the government's acting in bad faith. Well, what Carol's referring to is bringing up to date on this is, you know, there's just so much we can take getting slapped around that I'm being honest here, I threw up. I've been so wound up over this because I've worked hard with Rep. Coblinilla back in 07. I wrote for her, rather, something that passed House Bill 724, and it said, let's straighten this out and only withhold what we need. Now, it didn't make a hearing in the state Senate, so it passed the House unanimously. I'm working with Rep. Coblinilla. It says, we got to do what's right. This is what is just. Well, Carol Fukunaga was the senator at the time and says, I'm not going to hear this measure. The bill had to go to her. Says, you know what? I need to know what the Department of Finance needs to collect the tax first before I go ahead and trim this thing down from 10%. Let's just find out. Well, here comes Act 213,
mm-hmm.
Session Laws 2007, House Bill 500. And there's Section 121 in there. And this was a way to get around the system, so to speak, Coblinilla had championed. And it says, you know what, 20 days before legislative session, we want the department, finance director, all you guys to come and you tell us what it costs the state to actually collect this tax, put it into the city's coffers. Well, in 08, they said, well, you got 23 positions costing $748,000. In 09, you got 20 positions costing some $700,000. Well, a 10% cut off this tax, roughly, depending upon each year what the what is being generated with the revenue, is $16 to $20 million. Let's call it $20 million a year that the state is pocketing. They're cut, like a drug dealer. You with me? And so they've got their cut. Now, Senator Carol Fukunaga got this report. Now, guess who was the majority leader for the state of Hawaii Democrat? Excuse me, the Democrats, let's call it, Kirk Caldwell. So he's the guy who gets this report on his desk. He's there. He's the man in charge. Now, I threw up the other week because I saw a newscast on television that said, and it showed him saying, I've been asking for years from the state what it is that they need to collect this tax. What do they actually need to expend? And they've refused. They've declined. They haven't told me. I can't get an answer out of these guys. So, you know, listeners, I think the police have been called. They're probably on their way here because I'm going to tell you something about this mayor. Is that when he smiles and he looks at you, he does it so well that it's hard to imagine that he's stealing from you. It's just so hard to believe in broad daylight. Well, when he said he doesn't know, and we have it in writing, we have a report. And by the way, when I was a council member in 2011, I introduced a measure, and I got an internal memo that it was actually $600,000. Now, a year to process the tax. It's gone down. So here's the point. House Bill 134 comes about. They do triage on collecting this 10% surcharge from 05. First time that that bill has been opened up since 05 passage, yeah? First time. So now everybody's been waiting. It's been 8 years they've been collecting this tax. Everyone in the public, everyone knows this is bad government practice, acting in bad faith. So what do? You got conference committee chairs, okay, that hammer out House Bill 134 between the Senate and the House. Now, who's on it? Guess. Senator Sparrow, Senator Breen Hashimoto, Senator Clarence Nishihara.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you ask any one of them, are you for keeping that 10% ripoff? Oh, heck no. Are you kidding? I'm not for that. And you say to them, well, then who kept it in the bill? Now, everybody listening, if you voted for any of them, you should go to a neighborhood board meeting and ask them, why didn't you make this correction? Because I personally went to them and testified. Please make this correction. You can do it now. So as this bill bounced back and forth and all the legislators were apprised, you got on the House side of the conference, finance chair, Luke, and you have the whole followers behind the transportation chair, you name it. But without having to name all the names, everyone who voted for House Bill 134 voted yes, knowingly knew that they were stealing and violating the Hawaii State Constitution because they're levying a tax that they know they're profiting off of. And in the Constitution, you can't levy a tax on a service for more than what you need. It's there in black and white. Now, they get around it because they're claiming that the legislature gave them the authority to collect this tax. Now, if anybody, I think grassroots is going to sue this. Mm-hmm. Now, Carol, what got your blood boiling to say, hey, Tom, you want to chat about this? I'm sorry to take up so much time, but I want your listeners to know that when you're being told that this 10% administrative fee, when it all adds up of a 20-year tax collection, is 2 years out of everyone's pocketbook to the state. In other words, a 20-year tax, 18 years of it goes to pay for rail, 2 years of the 20-year tax goes straight into the pockets of these guys. Now, here's what's offensive, Carol, is that that money collected goes in the general fund. Here's why Joe Suki and everybody else, Rep. Suki, sorry, Speaker of the House, why they're all for this. Because they in the general fund get that money to the neighboring islands, the counties who don't pay into the tax. Think about it. There's a $400 million infusion, Carol, when it's all said and done, going to Maui and the Big Island, who don't pay squat. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, when you do the math, how can you prove it? It's in the general fund. It's funding their, quote, special projects and CIPs. Well, the point is, it's in the general fund. So why did I bring up Senator Sparrow? I went to a town hall meeting, and I asked him, you had an opportunity to stop that 10% fee. You were the chair. You got the power now. You, the guy, went through your fingers. You could say that 10% really isn't good. I'm going to correct it. And you know what he said to me at the town hall meeting? Well, no fear. I am going to take that money and dedicate it to some other use. I said, well, it belongs to the rail. Oh, no. I have found another home for it. because it's in that general fund. Let's do something with that money. And I'm thinking, well, that's stolen money. So the mindset, listeners, and Carol, thank you, and I'll end with this. So I apologize. Thank you for hanging in with me. Is that when I tried to correct this in the council, believe it or not, the vote was 6-3 against me. Six council members actually said in my resolution to tell the state to correct it and said, Berg, you got to knock off the antics. You got to calm it down. Don't you dare tell them what to do and do things proper. And so the six actually voted against the language to do good government practices.
Rod.
Yes.
That this bill that he's talking about, Act 213, was this before your time, or were you familiar with any of this?
No, I was in the city council.
Yeah. But I mean, with people, I'm sure the city had to express a need for it. The state didn't just come up with this act.
No, I know that. Like,
what's the background to this?
Tom is saying is correct. Basically, whenever you put money, taxes, in the general fund, it's a free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislators and the governor can use it for whatever they want to.
But who would have in city? I mean, I can't imagine the state just adopting this Act 213 and just out of the wild blue yonder.
Well, the city was just happy to get the money for the rail.
Well, but I'm saying,
he's correct. He's
my
correct,
question, though, is real clear. Who in the city? I mean,
I can answer that. The
state is not going to, the legislature is not going to just generate this bill on their own, this act. Uh-huh. Who in the city went to the legislators across that bridge and said, this is what we need, push through Act 213?
Well, basically, you had Mufi Hanneman, and also, too, was Kirk Caldwell, working together as a team.
Okay.
Well, Act 213, okay.
You guys have it.
I have no disagreement with what he's... We're all examining a process where 76 legislators and a governor know that the practice is wrong. They've been asked to fix it, politely, for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how is the city culpable for this? It's very clear. There are two parties that come and powwow here, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, when the state legislature gave the counties the authority to do what they had, as you saw in my email, Carol, I was saying and testified to Chair Martin in this whole process with Bill 23 this past with the council to extend the tax, that, you could put a clause, city, on your end, kick it back there in session, and say, we will not extend this 5-year tax until contingent upon the legislature amend Act, it's 247 from Hawaii, 1309 from 2005, amend this act and collect the administrative fee of which is necessary and needed. We all know $700,000, let's call it, a year instead of $20 million.
Right.
That could have been done by 9 city council members and signed off by the mayor. So when the city council chose to do nothing, who advocated, who did or didn't do anything, it was a document where we, the people, saw the truth, saw justice, and we witnessed a mayor, 9 council members, the state legislature, and the governor actually enable and coddle this impropriety, this lack of integrity in government. What say you?
So that means
he's correct. He's correct in terms of the storytelling that went behind and the misuse in terms of what a tax money is, basically. They saw this big open doors to use other tax money for other services, right? And it was for projects within each legislator's district, frankly, that they benefited.
Because the beneficiary would be the city of Act 213, right? And the city had to put something together and draft this bill or consult the legislators to get them to, as Sparrow or whomever, someone had to have conversations. Says, we need this. And someone said to them, well, let's design Act 213 and we'll introduce it. But they rely on the city personnel or someone in the city.
Well, there's collusion going to involve. Bottom line is collusion. Collusion between those who are in favor of this 5% excise tax, even the extension of it.
Mm-hmm.
The past legislative session, Mayor Kirk Caldwell was pushing for it. The legislature asked him, what is it? How many more years do you need it? What is the price tag? He said, and he never answered that, quite frankly. Okay? And then so it was getting close to the end of session, so they said, okay, we'll get it on the basis that the council has a responsibility to give us the answers.
Okay.
Okay? And the council never did because they couldn't get the answers from the mayor. Now the mayor is saying, well, you know, I want accountability now. His tune was different before. He always said he wanted to run the rail, but now because the public is asking him with accountability, the financial accountability, now he's singing the same song because he's lacking the year for himself.
This is a crisis, yeah, for Carol and for your listeners, because we have to rewind, and every time someone rewinds the clock, we don't want to hear it because it's so sour.
Yeah.
It's sour news, but this is important. When Mayor Carlisle at the time announced the contract to Ansaldo, remember this, Ansaldo got it because they had the lowest bid for construction. In other words, if we rushed this project through, the monies would be at its lowest end. So, folks, listen to this. The lowest end of that $1.4 billion contract to build this rail, we're way over on the low end of a bid. Now, Bombardier and Sumitomo, they were the opposite. They had high construction costs. Listen to this. Low O&M, operations maintenance. So guess what's going to kick in when this rail starts with the 80 rail cars and they start doing this in phases? The O&M of Ansaldo, which is, guess what, listeners, the high end of their contract. So if we can't muster up the bill today to pay on the low end of a contract, wait till the high end kicks in. So when you say, what were the answers, Mayor? What did the state legislature say back and forth? You know what? They're not letting us, the public, when you talked about, I was listening on my way in, talk about the Star Advertiser and Ethics Commission and everything, and who's paying off who. Well, Chuck Tuttle gets a salary from the city council, right? And so when we think things through, when I listen to Carol Cox's radio program, I just say to myself, when I go in that voting booth, I'm going to do some purging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, if I may add, you know, Chuck Tuttle's not getting his salary from the city council. He's getting his salary at part of the administration of Kirk Caldwell.
But the council then has to codify.
Yeah, we have to put the budget together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is a mistake. There's no oversight over Chuck Tuttle.
Yes, at big all. Mistake.
Yeah, he's acting as a judge and jury
and prosecutor.
And prosecutor. He has no foundation of what is good evidence and what is bad evidence. He arbitrarily chooses what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and basically this is what's wrong with boards and commissions in the state and city. They shouldn't make decisions. Recommendations should go up to the executive in terms of the governor or the mayor, and they make the decisions. It's a cop-out for the governor and the mayor to say, oh, we have a board of director, a board or commission that will make the recommendations and all.
You know. Can I say, you know, more oversight? There is something. You know, when there was a federal law passed recently and said, you know what? When we give you municipalities grant money, yeah, to build your projects, you cannot use one penny to pay off lobbyists.
Okay.
Well, the city and county heart says, well, we're going to get around that law. We're going to pay a guy named Dennis Dwyer,
yeah,
$300K a year. Now, what does he do? Does he punch in every day? Yeah, what does the guy do for a living? Well, I asked those questions. I don't want to bore your listeners, but we're paying a guy $300,000 a year that if it were paid with federal dollars, would be illegal. It tells you everything you need to know about this heart. It is so undermined that when we expose things and lay them out there for everybody to see, Colleen Hanabusa, conflict of interest, you tell me. It is so riddled, laden.
You know that in the new dictionary now, if you look for conflict of interest, look up the word conflict, the term, you'll see a picture of Colleen Hanabusa.
Oh, yeah. The picture dictionary.
I'm sorry. But it should.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know, she comes in and represents the city council, and then she represents Hart, and then she's a supporter of Hart. What is this, Peyton Place?
Well, you know, there's two ways of getting to be of a higher position, whether it be appointed or basically, is that either you have the knowledge, which is the credibility of yourself, or you become a yes person.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to become a yes person.
For many people. The poster child for Kirk Caldwell, Chuck Tuttle, Colleen Hanabusa, and we say, well, Dan and Noy, the power is going to shift. Never, 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 because there's a lot of people on that bus got their own little empires, and they all praise Colleen Hanabusa because, you know, God sent her here for us. That's the take you take away with this, because this just too, this whole process of heart is just, it's mind-boggling that we, the taxpayer, would even tolerate this thing called heart and the process and how it's being presented and what we tolerate. I've never seen anything like it. I often wondered, and when I was a child, reading about the lemmings that walk off into the sea up in the north cold country, and they drown themselves. We're just one bit of fur from that. I don't believe that we got much more room to give politically, financially, and I just hate the thought of how many senior citizens are going to be homeless due to the high taxing, the high fees, and the service rates and all. And this is a reality. That's my biggest fear. We now see Micronesians and veterans and some people homeless. But I think at the current pace, and what is going on, the trend, we're going to see more homeless senior citizens that are not able to sustain themselves due to this increase of fees and licenses and taxes.
What you're saying is definitely true, if I may add. You know, the rail, we're going to be paying a hefty price, quite frankly. We're hefty in terms of property tax, because the city, 80% of its revenue is from property tax. 20% is from the state and federal and so forth, right? Okay? But 80% is from property tax that pays for your services. Now, property tax is going to go sky high. Over 80% or over 60% of Hawaii's residents are senior citizens who own homes.
Mm-hmm.
And they live on fixed incomes, quite frankly. And you're right. A lot of them are going to have to sell their homes because they can't afford the property tax.
Yeah.
Or else they're going to have to go live in what you call affordable rentals. But there's not enough affordable rentals.
Okay.
But if there's not enough there, what happens? You become homeless.
I think there's a crisis looming that we can't even begin to think of its magnitude. You guys want to take a call or two, or you
have
a comment?
I wanted to
go ahead.
This ties into the real, if I can. It's important because I think I came in because, Carol, there's theft going on, okay? Now, there's one other theft that I'd like to just really quickly, and it ties in. It has to do with what you said about your 5 points. And one of them is this government delaying the mapping of important ag land, okay? And the Oahu General Plan. All these things are 4 to 5 years delayed. Now, Caldwell masterminded this process. If we tie it in, there was an impact, ag impact conversion rating for OPLE. And the Parsons, talk about a conflict, graded this as crappy land, okay? Crappy land. Yeah, worthless. Now, we would have called them out had Laura Thielen, when she was the ag liaison, okay, under Carlisle, she said, I can do this in a day. You just give me TMK. I can tell you if it's qualified. It's got running water. You got it in production. It's A and B soils prime. You're in. You qualify. Important ag land. Guess what, folks? Had they followed the rule of law, that rail wouldn't be going through OPLE. You talk about loss of this and the homeless and paying for that. It's loss of your food, the basic foodstuffs. That's also a loss. That's called theft because they did it. The theme is the roost. It's a ruse. And so that impact rating, the delays in this plan. Now, you were a council member.
Yes.
And you stuck to the Oahu General Plan. It was a timeline. Had to be amended every so many years. By delaying the process to codify what each individual plan is, a Waianae plan, there's an EBA development plan, North Shore plan. Well, they're all in that, in the pot, right, of the Oahu's General Plan. By delaying that, I'm going to ask you, do you think that was done by design to Caldwell to say to his egg liaison for the last 4 years, don't map Ho'opili? Because guess what? It was only codified, egged urban, last year, folks. It wasn't when the LUC ruled that it was no longer urban, okay? It was June of last year. So 4 years running, Caldwell could have told his egg liaison, you go see if Ho'opili qualifies as important egg land. And he directed his egg liaison to not map that land and delay this project. And that's another piece of theft.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that if Hoa Pili, if a proposal was to raise hemp on Hoa Pili, it would have not passed?
I think it's not relevant.
Yeah, because Hoa Pili, this is my concern, and I've been watching, is that, you see, the Thielens, who was an ag agent, her brother and her mother was quite active and aggressively pursuing the right to grow hemp in the projects, right? So maybe that was a little distraction. Why didn't we see this was an aggressive action needed on Hoa Pili? But she got the job, and she did what?
No, this the good part is Laura Thielen, when she got the job, told everyone, I can map this thing. I haven't done it in a year. But she bailed ship and ran for state senate.
That's what
the next liaison came in. The election goes on. Caldwell sits on this for 4 years.
Yeah.
Sits on this thing. Now, you know.
Well, I'm asking, so she didn't return back and she didn't leave any instructions. She hasn't actively pursued this, has she?
Now, Laura Thielen is, in my opinion, the smoking gun here.
Well, yeah, that's why when you say it's relevant,
she could just come forward.
All
well, it's relevant, not the brother and
no,
the mom.
No, it's relevant.
Well,
we don't need to weigh in.
I don't know if hemp with or without on Hoa Pili.
Well, no, that was just a little poke.
I got you.
You tell?
No, I'm poked. I got ribs and so.
You know, Carol,
oh, that's right.
You came up to something that draws my attention, if I may, and I learned the hard way, and I've been reading this one book called The Art of War.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Art of War says know who your allies are and know who's your opponents when you attempt to do something, when you fight a war. And in this case, whether it's for a cause, for or against, you have to know who your opponents and your allies are.
Yeah,
that's what you're calling for.
These modern politicians tend to, on their way to the big house, they're going to come back. So check them on the way out. They're going to steal your silver, your china, or something. They're not just going to come there and be invited guests and serving the people. They're just not going to do it. They're going to either take the candles or something.
I want to come full circle on that, taking the candles, because that's what was in 08 when they said the land was worthless. It was done by Parsons.
Yeah.
Jan Reicheldorfer, I believe her name was, she signed off saying it was crappy. Now, if the ag liaison said it qualifies as important ag land under the 1978 state constitution, which mandated such, then it would have revealed that Hart and the city, DTS, whoever it may be, had submitted this plan to the feds, an untruthful characterization. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can't have ag land that is the most precious to be preserved by state law, and then tell the feds, on the other hand, it's worthless.
It's crap.
So that's why I'm trying to say in this conversation that it's beyond Mayor Caldwell just lying straight to your face.
Yeah.
It's his whole team.
Yeah. Let's take a couple calls.
I agree with you.
Let's take a couple calls just real quick, and hopefully they don't want to go long. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment or question real quick.
Thank you. It sounds like this other guy you have on your show might be able to answer that question regarding how is it that Dan Inouye was able to execute a $1.6 million grant for the rail. Maybe he has some knowledge on that.
Okay.
How that's done. And the other thing is, what can be said in the grant that the government would accept it?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
For the caller, that was called New Starts. It was a federal program that allowed municipalities to compete for this funding. So a lump sum was put in. And then all these, there were some 30 cities, and we were one of them, and said, hey, we'd like to advance a project. What I think the caller is getting at is, how did we get the worst project you can get? In other words, steel wheel is so antiquated.
Well, no, he's saying there was $1 billion allocated to this, given in a grant to this rail.
Well, okay.
Is there such a thing?
What he's referencing is what's called the Full Funding Grant Agreement.
Okay.
FFGA was executed on December 19 of 2012. That locked in the federal government with a contract with us to build the 21-station, 20-mile steel wheel elevated fixed guideway project, whereby the feds will pay in installments over the, quote, five-year period, this $1.55 billion. So we have so much left that they would give to us. Now, we may be breaching that if we can't have an operation date meet this or that. Well, rather than give you the details, the grant came about not through just Senator Inouye at the time, but through a process whereby all those in the entire country, we were fortunate to get this money. And unfortunately, though, what backfired is the ramming through the wrong technology, because I see someone over here across the window, Carol Cox, who fought as well to change that technology, because that's the big problem in mess we're in today. A lot of the problems could be solved had we not jumped in. There's UN money. There's other things we could have done to bring in a better rail project to fit this town. And what we got is something that don't fit.
So $1.5 billion. Did the city get all that money, or is it to be in installments, right?
We have about $700 million left.
So it was never, was it squandered?
No, well, we draw down on the money.
Okay, but so in answer to the question of this caller, is there's a billion some dollars that was squandered and taken by Senator Dan Inouye and others.
No, he didn't take it, because we've drawn down roughly $450-60 million of the $1.55 billion. We've drawn down.
Okay,
so if the Feds say, you know what, you got to pay this back, we don't like what we're seeing over there.
Okay,
and we're out. That's what we would have to pay. That's what we would forfeit.
Thank you, caller. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead real quick for your comment or question.
Thank you very much. I want to give an Aquino quote. Initiative is not appropriate on the ballot. We have representative government. Representatives have more access to make decisions. We have the proper forms. Aquino are a safeguard against bad decisions and bad government. The government has access to the right information, the kind of information to make the right. If you have a public vote, it's just PR. Mr. Aquino.
Okay.
To me, that's double talk, basically, because Tom and I know that we're proponents in terms of public hearings.
Right.
And the people involved in decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to depend in terms of one elected official to make all the decisions, then basically they're not going to be responsive in terms of what you want. They won't listen to you. That's what he said. I don't have to listen to you. I'll make all the decisions because you elected me into office.
Mm-hmm.
And when you agree or disagree, I don't care. That's what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Hey, well, Tom, thank you for getting close to the answer, because we've had that question raised on the $1 billion. And unless I know someone stole from me, I'm never going to say they did. So, you know, thank you. And anything real quick? And I've got Tony Lucretio came in to visit us, too, so we're... But
well, you know, be free to call me. I'm open. My cellular number is area code 808-216-5454, Rod Tam. And
how do you get in touch with you, Tom?
I got a show forever today. It's on Olelo. Just look it up. You'll see me. You can find me.
But how do we get to you? My people like to be able to talk to you now at 222-222-222.
I'm an email guy. TomBird00 at Yahoo.
TomBird00
at Yahoo.
00 at Yahoo. Mm-hmm. Well, as I always said, you have a wealth of knowledge. And see, the thing is, some may say, well, why you bring Tom Berg in? Because you will talk to anybody and give them the truth of what you have. Most of these guys, to talk to them, you got to call their communication specialists and then get told, go screw yourself, you know, and get brushed off. And so if my listeners out there wondering why I don't bring those people on and go sucking up to the mayor and all those people, because they don't think much of us, because we want the truth. We don't want to witness people being ripped off and screwed. And so they're not going to come and talk to me. So thank you guys for putting it on the line and coming in. So, Rod?
I'm glad that people are listening in. And, you know, be free to ask for the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't listen or read newspaper articles and think they're factual.
Right? Yeah.
Because that's not the truth.
Tom, anything in closing?
Oh, no. Just please, everybody, in Election Day 2016, just don't vote them back, please.
Yeah, so don't vote for Caldwell, they're saying.
I agree also.
Now, you vote for who you want to.
He's a PR man only.
Vote for who you want to, but as you see your little pensions, you know, diminishing and hard times are presenting themselves, just think you had a chance in the booth. And so Take care. We'll see you next week. But please start setting up for the Jones Act.
Sure,
we're gonna talk about the Jones Act, Mr. Jones, and I'm gonna even play me and Mr. Jones,
that's
Mrs.
Fine.
Jones.
I think it's a good time to bring it out.
There's some theft
on
going
the table. On the table.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, let's get this straightened out.
So on this show, we're gonna end up calling 911 because we're gonna find out who the crooks are.
Let's have a public hearing here.
All right. We're gonna find out who the crooks are.
Not willing to have at all.
911, brother. Okay. Thank you guys for joining in, and
thank you
for listening to the Carol Cox Show. CarolCox.com is the address for email.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.